response to the multiple attacks facing the Bolivarian Republic. Maduro was addressing crowds of his supporters outside the presidential palace in Caracas. He warned that Venezuela will resist any attempt to impose a political change by force. Meanwhile, the national government denounced the theft of Citgo Petroleum Corporation by a U.S. court, together with sectors of the Venezuelan extreme right, as part of an operation to plunder the assets of the Venezuelan people.
La empresa Citgo es un valioso.
Citgo is a valuable asset of Petróleos de Venezuela, which the U.S. government intends to plunder by means of legal proceedings that are clearly contrary to law.
De un procedimiento judicial.
Precisely, the Venezuelan government previously denounced before OPEC that the Trump administration is attempting to provoke regime change in order to seize its assets and oil reserves, the largest in the world. For this reason, the National Assembly defends the national sovereignty over this resource and its industry.
But we in this caucus, all the parliamentarians here are going to vote in favor of this draft agreement because when the homeland is in danger, anything is permitted except not defending it.
The amount of resources that have been plundered from the country cannot be described at this time.
Parliamentarians, in line with the government and its defense of natural resources, approved this draft agreement that condemns the theft from the people, orchestrated by the most radical and submissive opposition, as well as by the United States government and its multiple attacks on the Bolivarian Republic.
From all instances, Venezuela stands resolute to maintain its independence and to preserve its resources. Those are the premises that are the cornerstone of the Bolivarian Revolution, and the current policies by the government facing new forms of attacks. Gladys Quesada, Caracas, Venezuela.
Today is the third and final day of that judicial review in this court. It's in fact a legal challenge brought by the direct action group Palestine Action against its prescription by the Labor government in July this year. Last month, the judges heard from the representatives of the Palestine Action Group, but today, the final day, the judges are hearing from lawyers representing the Interior Ministry, known to Britons as the Home Office. But here's how we got here.
Set up in 2020, Palestine Action's stated goal is to end global participation in Israel's genocidal and apartheid regime. It's mainly targeted weapons factory, especially those belonging to the Israeli group Elbit Systems. In July this year, activists protesting against Israel's genocidal war on Gaza broke into an Air Force base in southern England, causing, the government claims, more than $9 million in damage to two aircraft. Days later, then Home Secretary Yvette Cooper declared the group a terrorist entity, effectively making membership or support for the group a criminal offense. The ban took effect in July 5th.
It's a massive, massive overreaction and, frankly, an act of state repression to stop the people from mobilizing in a way that they feel is detrimental to their financial interests.
Seeing this as an attack on their civil liberties, thousands have since come out in a string of rallies, holding up signs reading these words. At least 2,300 have been arrested, more than 200 charged with offenses that carry up to 6 months in prison. Earlier this year, Palestine Action's co-founder, Huda Amouri, requested and won permission for a judicial review of the ban at this court, for the court to see if the ban was lawful, if the Home Office followed the correct procedure before proceeding to proscribe the group. In October, the government tried and failed to block the challenge going ahead. And last month, after days of nationwide sign-holding protests, the judicial review finally began. But at the last minute, Martin Chamberlain, the judge due to hear the legal challenge, was replaced by a panel of three judges without explanation. Two of those replacement judges have links that campaigners say raise the appearance of a conflict of interest.
The case against some of the most formidable foes in the world, the British state, the Israeli state, the weapons industry. These are not people who are going to take this lightly. So it doesn't surprise me that they're willing to sabotage the process.
Dame Victoria has familial links to prominent pro-Israel lobbyist and major Labor Party donor Trevor Chin and the group Quilliam, which has been widely condemned as Islamophobic and for supporting far-right agitator Tommy Robinson. And Justice Jonathan Swift, who dismissed WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange's extradition appeal back in 2023, has represented the Home Office, which is the defendant in this judicial review, on more than one occasion.
A judgment is expected at a later date, but if the judges in this court find in favor of Palestine Action, the group could potentially be deproscribed. The charges against its many supporters will have to be dropped, and not only that, it'll be a huge embarrassment for the British government that the pro-Palestine demonstrators in the country accuse of participation in Israel's genocidal war on Palestinians. Saipur is up, London.
Pakistan's Defense Minister Khwaja Asif has said that Muslim countries should revisit their diplomatic stance on Gaza, arguing that incessant Israeli ceasefire violations have undermined peace efforts. His comments come as several regional governments express frustrations over the failure of internationally backed agreements to halt military operations. Officials in Islamabad say any reassessment would aim to push for a more reliable framework that prevents future breaches. The idea of a collective Muslim response has been gaining traction in recent weeks, particularly as the Gaza humanitarian concerns deepen.
Daily ceasefire violations are occurring by the Israeli forces, and Muslim Ummah needs to be united and have one solution with one voice, but they are not raising their voices against the Israelis.
Countries across West Asia have been consulting one another on possible political steps, including coordinated pressure through regional bodies. Observers say the broader question is whether Muslim-majority states can unify around a position strong enough to influence future negotiations. Pakistan's call reflects a wider debate over the limits of current mediation efforts. They point out any new approach would require consensus among key regional actors and a clearer mechanism for enforcing commitments on all sides and a more sustainable political roadmap for Gaza.
What will Israel do? Will it continue to violate the ceasefire? This is an existential question for all the countries who have agreed to this U.S.-backed solution. How long will they allow Israel to kill innocent Palestinian children? No, they will reconsider.
The debate points to a wider re-evaluation underway throughout the Muslim world, suggesting that Gaza's future may hinge on a new coordinated regional strategy that could reshape the way the conflict is addressed. Khanwa Muhyiddin, Islamabad.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Iran, a place whose story is far more complex than the headlines suggest. Over the past four decades, the country has quietly engineered one of the most dramatic transformations in public health anywhere in the world. In 1979, life expectancy in Iran was just 56 years. Today, it stands at 75, a 19-year leap. For comparison, during the same period, life expectancy in the United States rose only 3 years, and in France, 8. The numbers tell a story of rapid, determined progress, built on investment in healthcare, expanded insurance coverage, and a national push for better medical services. It's an undeniable sign of Iran's progress and capabilities in the medical field. One of the clearest indicators of a nation's health is maternal and infant mortality. Following the victory of the Islamic Revolution, as access to clinics and trained medical staff increased, Iran saw maternal deaths fall to 20 per 100,000 live births. That's less than 1% of the global rate, which stands at roughly 200 per 100,000. Specialists in obstetrics and gynecology call it one of the country's quiet medical revolutions.
Still, some critics abroad often claim that Iran is a country that is defined only by its drones and missiles. But a deeper look inside the country's scientific institutions paints a very different picture.
Mr. Mohammad Reza Kompani, CEO of a high-tech medical equipment company, outlined how Iran's medical equipment sector has expanded since the victory of the Islamic Revolution.
The medical equipment of Iran has actually been started from the revolution, after the revolution. Before that, we had only the furnitures and such things and autoclave for sterilization of the goods. But after that, about 10 years after the revolution, right after the ending the war, the medical equipment started the industry in Iran. And now, which I'm here, we have about 85% of the items are required to be used in the hospitals. I'm talking about the devices, because in medical equipment, we have two parts, the devices and the sundries and the disposables we used in the hospitals. So in the medical equipment, the devices, 85% of the hospitals are doing the equipping by the Ministry of Health are provided from the local manufacturers. It's the, as you see here, it's the operation room, the ICU, CCU, the dialysis section, the emergency, and the general hospital.
Iran's global ranking in science and research has climbed to 15th. 65 Iranian universities are now counted among the world's top institutions, 22 of them in medical sciences. Many cancers once considered fatal in Iran are now routinely treatable. 97% of the medicines Iranians use are produced inside the country. And through advanced transplants from cord blood to bone marrow, Iranian physicians now treat more than 70 diseases that once required travel abroad. In an interview with us, Iranian scientist Sepide Mirzayev Arzaghani, a Mustafa Prize laureate for scientists under 40 and a leading researcher in cancer drug resistance, highlighted Iran's giant leap in advanced therapeutic technologies, particularly in the field of gene therapy.
با دانشی که داریم و اینکه در حوزه زیست پزشکی ما امروز در دنیا حرف برای گفتن داریم و
With the expertise we have today, Iran has a real voice in the global biomedical arena. We've made significant progress in advanced therapeutic technologies, especially gene therapy. If there is sustained targeted investment, Iran can definitely become a regional hub for cancer research and cancer treatment.
4 decades ago, Iran ranked 39th in global scientific output. Today, it's 18th. In medical sciences alone, Iran has climbed from 38th to 10th worldwide. The country is among the 5 global leaders in advanced stem cell science, second in the world in bone marrow transplantation, and among the top 10 nations in nanotechnology, biotechnology, and infertility treatment. In biotechnology, Iran is now one of only 3 nations producing a wide portfolio of high-tech biopharmaceuticals, including the hepatitis B vaccine, erythropoietin, multiple interferons, streptokinase, GCSF, and others. And for more than 20 years, Iran has practiced clinical cell therapy, an area where many countries remain stuck in the research stage. Stem cells are now used in corneal, cardiac, skin, and other transplants across Iranian hospitals. Ms. Mirzayi also explained how her research on drug resistance in cancer led to her receiving the Mostafa Prize. The Mostafa Prize, founded in 2012, is considered one of the most prestigious science and technology awards in the Islamic world.
Can you please tell us more about your research that resulted in you receiving the Young Scientist Mostafa Prize?
پژوهش‌هایی که من انجام دادم و در واقع منجر شد به دریافت این جایزه ارزشمند.
My research, which led to this valuable award, focuses on drug resistance in cancer. I study the role of intercellular signaling pathways that cause cancer cells to become resistant to chemotherapy. These molecular pathways inside the cell play a crucial role. After several treatment cycles, they can make the patient's body less responsive to anti-cancer drugs and reduce the sensitivity of cancer cells therapy. What we're trying to do is to identify and regulate these signaling pathways. Cancer cells can activate certain pathways that, in turn, lower their sensitivity to treatment. By mapping and modulating these pathways, we aim to reduce drug resistance and restore or even increase the responsiveness of cancer cells to anti-cancer drugs.
Education has played a major part in this transformation. Iran now has nearly 70 medical universities and faculties, staffed by 22,000 faculty members.
The country's medical system hosts about 270,000 domestic students and 7,000 international students. Researchers in these institutions have authored more than 60,000 conference papers, 81,000 journal articles, and over 258,000 papers published internationally. 25 Iranian medical universities have been included in the Leiden Ranking 2025, with Tehran, Shahid Beheshti, Tabriz, Shiraz, and Iran University of Medical Sciences ranking below 500 globally. Women's enrollment in universities has also increased, and women now make up 50% of students and faculty, an important accomplishment. Many of these graduates have achieved prominent national and international positions.
Iran's push for scientific independence shows up in its pharmaceutical sector as well. For instance, 99% of medications are produced domestically.
Iran also produces 40% of its medical equipment and requires no outside technical assistance for the development of pharmaceutical formulations, something the country demonstrated during the Iran-Iraq War, the COVID-19 pandemic, and other crises. From 35 dependency-heavy drug companies in 1979, Iran has grown to more than 200 domestic pharmaceutical manufacturers today. Mr. Kompany also described how Iran weathered the COVID-19 pandemic using medical equipment supplied by domestic knowledge-based companies.
I'm telling you that for the rest of the products and the items which we have not produced yet, many, many science-based companies, which among of the 400 are working on them, and I will promise you in about 2 or 3 next year, we will have them as well. So there is no worry about the medical equipment, as we didn't have any problem during the corona. You see, in corona, we actually expend 6,000 ICU beds for the corona patients. So this means that we had the knowledge, we had the technology, we had the units, and all of them prevent us to choose the patients from the age and etc. to take it to the ICU. So every patient which needed to go to ICU, freely they could go. Then they hadn't had any problem. So Corona was the one among the 10 to 15 countries in the world which has no problem. Iran was one of them.
Iran now ranks first in Asia in the production of recombinant medicines, drugs used to treat cancers, MS, hemophilia, and viral illnesses. Vaccination coverage for children under 5 has risen from 20% before 1979 to full nationwide coverage, even in remote villages. Iran has produced key pharmaceutical raw materials for treatments of pulmonary hypertension, coagulation disorders, and chemotherapy. It has introduced the first nanotechnology-based injectable anti-cancer drug, Sinadoxazom, among a long list of other high-tech drugs. Iran is now one of the world's top three producers of radiopharmaceuticals, about 70 varieties. These supply 230 treatment centers and 6,500 nuclear medicine units inside Iran and are exported to 15 countries, generating roughly $70 million annually. The only remaining imports are certain raw isotopes, mainly from Russia. Ms. Mirzayi also explained how combination therapies can ultimately help increase hope and survival prospects for cancer patients.
What are some of the practical and clinical applications of your research regarding the diagnosis or treatment of cancer in the near future?
اینها جزء درمان‌های در واقع درمان‌هایی که ترکیبی هستن و طراحی داروهایی که
These are part of what we call combination therapies and gene-based drug designs. Treatments that combine conventional anti-cancer drugs with genetic components. They can be highly effective in preventing and overcoming drug resistance, which is one of the biggest challenges in cancer treatment. We also focus on targeting personalized therapies so that one standard drug is not prescribed for all patients. Instead, treatment is tailored to each patient's genetic profile, because even two people with, for example, lung cancer can have very different patterns of drug resistance. Designing targeted drugs for each individual can significantly improve treatment outcomes, reduce overall costs, and most importantly, increase hope for patients living with cancer.
We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. Tehran Times. Over 1,140 Iranians among world's 1% most cited researchers. A total of 1,142 Iranian researchers have been recognized among the world's top 1% most cited researchers in 2025, compared to 1,056 identified researchers in 2024, according to the Islamic World Science Citation Institute. The Ministry of Health, Treatment and Medical Education accounts for 52.77% and the Ministry of Science, Research and Technology with 427 researchers represents 37.43% of the most cited Iranian researchers, ISCIIR reported. Clinical medicine with 446 entries, engineering with 209 entries, pharmacology and toxicology with 163 entries, chemistry with 140 entries, neuroscience and behavior with 115 entries, agriculture sciences with 100 entries, and social sciences with 77 entries held the highest shares of the most cited researchers. Three Iranian researchers have been among the highly cited award recipients. IRNA, Iran among top 20 countries in medical science output, ISC. Iran ranks among the top 20 countries in terms of medical science publications indexed in the Scopus and Web of Science databases in 2023, according to figures from the Islamic World Science Citation Center. Given the importance of the health and medical fields and the advancements made by Iran in these areas, the ISC has prepared a report on the scientific and technological outputs in this sector, as well as on the most cited researchers and the global rankings of Iranian medical universities, ISC head Ahmad Fazalzadeh said on Saturday. Fazalzadeh pointed out that in comparison of different subject areas and the Web of Science databases, Iranian medical and health researchers have 158,678 documents in their names and the second highest scientific output from the country after engineering, technology, and natural sciences. ISNA, Iran among top three in radiopharmaceuticals expands nuclear scanners nationwide. Iran has established its position as one of the world's top three producers of radiopharmaceuticals, with statistics showing a nationwide increase in nuclear medicine imaging systems across all 31 provinces, according to reports. Radiopharmaceuticals technology, one of the major achievements of modern medicine, has driven significant advancements in diagnosing and treating complex diseases such as cancer over recent decades. Currently, Iran produces 70 types of radiopharmaceuticals, meeting the needs of more than 6,500 nuclear medicine centers nationwide. The country also exports these products to 15 countries, generating around $70 million in revenue in 2025. As part of efforts to achieve self-sufficiency, a cyclotron has been installed and commissioned at a hospital in Tehran to produce radioisotopes used in PET imaging. Mehr. Iran ranks 17th in world in science production, Minister. Iran's Minister of Science, Research and Technology, Hossein Simoisarov, says that Iran is ranked 17th in the world in terms of production of the scientific articles. He made the remarks on the sidelines of the cabinet session on November 12th, where he emphasized that the country is at the 17th rank in the world in the field of science production. The minister promised that his ministry would take effective steps to promote the level of science production on the regional and international stage. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
Medical tourism has become another thriving industry. In 2024, nearly a million patients from 160 countries traveled to Iran for treatments ranging from infertility and cosmetic surgery to cardiac care, ophthalmology, and organ transplantation. Diako Abbasi, Secretary of the Health Tourism Council, explained how Iran has become a destination for health tourism.
Iran,
Over the past two decades, Iran has become one of the leading health tourism destinations in the region and even the world. This growth stems from our scientific and technological progress in medicine, the strong expertise of Iranian doctors in diverse specialities, Iran's strategic location near countries with serious healthcare challenges, and our shared cultural background and long medical tradition. All of this has helped make Iran a distinctive and attractive destination for health tourism.
The country also maintains one of the region's largest research networks, with 849 medical research centers. These laboratories fuel Iran's growing scientific partnerships abroad and boost its presence in global health diplomacy.
We currently have around 300 hospitals licensed to provide international health services, fully capable of admitting foreign patients at a professional level. Their staff receive cross-cultural training, and they have dedicated international patient departments that operate under official authorization. In addition, there are about 700 active health tourism offices and companies that handle medical visas as well as patients' accommodation, transfers, and specialized guidance during their stay.
In ophthalmology, Iranian hospitals offer services on par with the most advanced nations. The country no longer sends patients abroad for eye care. Instead, patients from neighboring countries come to Iran for surgery due to lower costs, modern equipment, and highly trained surgeons.
Last year, our medical centers admitted foreign patients from around 140 countries, which shows just how strong and promising Iran's health tourism market is. Most international patients come from cardiology and cardiovascular surgery, orthopedics, infertility treatment, transplants, ophthalmology and ENT procedures such as cochlear implants, as well as cosmetic and general surgeries. They travel from countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, the Persian Gulf states, even Saudi Arabia, as well as European countries such as the UK and Germany. We've also received patients from countries like India and even from the United States and Australia. Our data clearly show that Iran is now treating patients from across the world.
Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, more than 11,000 Iranians were sent abroad each year for medical care. Today, the flow has reversed. The country has performed over 50,000 kidney transplants, around 7,000 heart transplants, and 225 pediatric heart transplants. Every month, roughly 80 million medical services are delivered across the country. In recent years, Iran has also joined the list of medical equipment exporters. Officials announced at the Iran Health 2025 exhibition that Iranian-made medical technology is now shipped to more than 60 countries. More than 17,000 medical technologies have been registered inside Iran, and many are already on the global market. From vital sign monitors and defibrillators to dental and laboratory equipment, as well as precision surgical tools. Mr. Kompany also elaborated on the export of Iranian medical equipment products.
As we are meeting all the standards, international standards of the medical equipment for our product, as the MOH has based on that. So we now have a very good quality devices and also the disposables in the country. So we have no problem for that, and we are exporting about to 40 countries, and we are earning a lot of money among this exporting. And also, we have our own production line in different countries, and by doing the rebranding, by the cooperation of the local agents and our companies in Iran, we have about in countries like Indonesia, Turkey, Iraq, Sweden.
About 65% of Iran's medical device industry is powered by knowledge-based companies, many of which born in universities and science parks. This pipeline of engineers and researchers has allowed Iran to develop high-tech devices such as AI-enhanced MRI machines, portable imaging units, and remote patient monitoring systems.
And there we have the Iranian ICU, which we have the ventilator, the special beds, the patient care monitoring system, and the gas supply. And as I told you during the corona, all this set was equipped from the local manufacturer, so we didn't have problem. And the price was very attractive because at the corona, many countries has to pay 10 times, 8 times of the real price of the ventilator, but here this unit was given to the MOH for 7,000 euro. But we had many offers from other companies like 50,000, 70,000, 40,000, different prices, but 6,000 of this unit was bought for only at the price of the 7,000 euro, which was very good. And now the real price in the world is about 10 to 12,000 euro.
Exports of medical equipment surpassed $500 million in 2024 and are projected to reach about $650 million by the end of 2025. West Asian and African countries are the largest buyers. The appeal? Iranian devices typically cost 30 to 40% less than their European counterparts, but offer comparable precision and reliability.
The quality is very good because they are meeting all these standards, international standards, and of course the price. Mm-hmm. For example, this operation room, the general operation room you see here, if you want to buy from a top brand company, European or American, you have to pay at least $200,000 to $300,000 US. But here you can get it for $70,000 US. So you see the different price.
And is it the same quality?
So it is.
You get, you get the same quality but for a lower price.
Of course. This is our advantage to entering to the market in international markets. So by having the people outside to cooperate with us, we will very soon will be anywhere in the world for the manufacturing of medical equipment and rebranding it.
Years after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iran's healthcare system continues to grow. Through decades of expansion from hospitals and clinics in major cities to health centers in the most remote villages, the promise of equitable healthcare has been largely realized. And for millions of people across the country, that promise has become a lived reality. That's all for today. Until next time, take care. We'll be right back.
morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. وصلى الله على محمد وآل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Brothers, sisters, listeners. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi. One of the keys that we've been dealing with is the relationship between people and the government. And we're talking about an Islamic government here, so don't let your mind drift too far. One of the things that an Islamic system needs to have, which is something that not a lot of Muslim countries deal with actually, is the concept of independence and rejecting humility. And if I'm honest, there's only one country in the world that abiding by this among the Muslims. Do you know which country? I hope you do. Now, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, he wants Muslims and Islam to live in honor, to be honored, not to humiliate themselves and lower themselves to please another government or another oppressive, tyrannic system. Are you guys following the drift? Do you see where I'm going with this? He said, salawatullahi wa salamuhu alayhi wa ala ali baytih, al-islamu ya'lu wa la yu'la alayhi. Islam always elevates and becomes elevated, and nothing goes above it. وَالْكُفَّارُ بِمَنْزِلَةِ الْمَوْتَى, and those who disbelieve are in the state of those who are dead. لَا يُحْجَبُونَ وَلَا يَرِثُونَ, they should not be in power in any way, shape or form, nor should they be, they should they inherit. So we have two systems in the world. An Islamic system and non-Islamic system. And the Islamic system needs to prevail, needs to rise higher above every other system, and everyone below it is considered to be dead. So as Muslimin, as Muslims who live under Islamic countries, these countries, these Islamic countries that we live under, they not supposed to humiliate themselves and bow to other systems. Because they are Muslims, and a Muslim is higher than everyone else. And obviously, especially when we talk about the system themselves. Imam Salih Salamullah alayhi says, Inna Allah fawwada ila al-mu'min umuruhu kullaha. The Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given the permission to the believer to do all his affairs by himself. Everything was, you know, you were given permission to do what you like, except one. وَلَمْ يُفَوَّضْ إِلَيْهِ أَنْ يَكُونَ دَلِيلًا, but you have not been given the right to humiliate yourself. That's not something that you can do. You can't just say, you know what, well, let another system come along and take over, and I'm just going to bow to them, and whatever they want, I'm going to do. That's not your right. You have no right to bow to anyone beside Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Muslims should not humiliate themselves to a point where every system, every country, every superpower comes and walks all over them. They come to their land, they take their oil, they take their gold, they take their everything, and these systems cannot say anything. But yet, we see systems, they themselves, they voluntarily donate billions of dollars to other systems, as if they're giving them taxes for protection. That is the pinnacle of humility. That's the highest level of humility that anyone could reach. Is that when you yourself donate to an oppressive system to become humiliated by your own. Okay, I'm getting worked up here. Let us take a short break and then we will come back. Oh.
آیت الله جوادی آملی, the author of the book مفاتیح الحیات, the keys of life.
این مفاتیح باید دو جلد باشه, چندین سال این حرف گفته میشه.
This book مفاتیح ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است, چه فرون دماغ و سواب داره فرون روزون است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درختکاری اینجا کم سواب داره, دعا هم داره, سواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی. اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره, همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری میگه ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. So we said Muslims need to be independent and should be honored under no circumstances should they allow themselves or others to humiliate them. And the Imam Salamullah, Imam Sadiq, we began with the hadith that says Allah gave the right to a person to take care of his affairs except that he humiliates himself. And then he uses the Quran to emphasize his point, and he says, أَمَا تَسْمَعَ اللَّهَ عَزَّ وَجَلْ يَقُولُ, have you not heard Allah says, وَلِلَّهِ الْعِزَّةُ وَلِرَسُولِهِ وَلِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ, the honor belongs to Allah, to the Prophet, and to the believers. You're honored. You should not lower yourself. You should not bow. You should not weaken. You are a Muslim. You have Allah and the Prophet behind you. How could you bow to anyone else? How could you surrender to someone else? You need to be independent. You need to refuse humility and at no cost. And Imam Hussein Salamullahi Alayhi in Karbala, we saw what he said. He said, I would rather die than live a life of humility, being humiliated by another system or by the ruthless, oppressive system. I won't accept that for myself. And I won't accept that for the believers either. You need to die with honor and dignity. That's how it should work. And then the Imam Sadiq Salamullah Alayhi, he continues his saying, and he says, فَالْمُؤْمِنْ يَكُونُ عَزِيزًا وَلَا يَكُونُ ذَلِيلًا. A mu'min at all times, he needs to be honored and not humiliated. And mind you, we put ourselves in humiliation, not that someone comes and just forces me into humiliation. If someone comes and invades my country, invades my city, invades whatever, my duty is to fight him. But sometimes we allow people to humiliate us. We give them whatever they want and we back down because we become cowards and we can't fight for ourselves, we can't fight for our rights. So we back down ourselves. We become cowards in our own countries, and then we submit. That's not something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would accept for me, you, or any believer. And then the Imam said, إِنَّ الْمُؤْمِنَ أَعَزُّ مِنَ الْجَبَلِ. A mu'min is much stronger, more powerful, more, he has more honor, in a sense, than a mountain. So when you look at a mountain, you look, it's a huge, solid, you know, it gives you that feel of power. The Imam says a mu'min is much more solid and powerful than that of a mountain. لِأَنَّ الْجَبَلِ يُسْتَغَلُّ مِنْهَ بِالْمَعَاوِلِ. A mountain, you can go with axes and you could shorten it, you can destroy it, you could make holes into it, you could put a TNT into it, and you could make it into rubble, as they do today. وَالْمُؤْمِنْ لَا يُسْتَقَلُّ مِنْ دِينِهِ بِشَيْءٍ. But a believer, no matter what you do to him, you cannot take away his religion. You cannot make in his religion weakens. You cannot make it less. So again, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he does not want the believers to be humiliated. They need to be honored. So Muslims, wherever they might be in their Islamic systems, they need to have independency from any other systems. They should not be following any other system, taking directions and directives from other systems. They should not be submissive to other systems. I know you guys know what I'm saying, right? I will leave it here, inshallah, and I will continue this discussion in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams. Hear the children's cries.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into your trusted companion on the airwaves, Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran. We're grateful you've chosen to spend part of your day with us. First up, it's time for news. Following the news, join us for Foresight. This program explores the practical dimensions of worship and servitude to Allah in confronting the challenges of modern life. Featuring lectures and speeches by renowned English-speaking scholars from the Islamic world, Foresight focuses on deepening understanding of devotion to God as a guiding principle for contemporary issues. Afterwards, we return with another segment of radio production. Coming up next, news. Please stay tuned.
It's too late. If you haven't spoken up yet, it might be too late for you. This is your call to say something and not let history judge you for what you should have done.
There once was a day when we were shadows in the street, paper thin excuses crumbling at our feet. Screens glowed brightly, selling fear and doubt. The truth bled quietly, seldom spoken out. But today it's on the news again that the Zionist entity has murdered Palestinians and burned their city. Savagery is in their blood, genocide their game. The world is watching live as they enter the hall of shame. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late.
judge by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. America gives the go-ahead, then it sends in bombs. Israel calls it self-defense and murders without qualms. Since when has killing children become a source of pride? Silence must be broken if you want to turn the tide. It's time we made the right choice. Our lives may be on the line. It's time we raised our voice, chanting free, free Palestine. The police can do what they want to do, detain one or two. The thousands of millions are coming through, a move they cannot undo. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
A reminder of our top stories. Israel has sparked alarm after announcing it will open the Rafah crossing only to let Palestinians leave Gaza. Pakistan and Afghanistan military forces once again exchange fire along their border areas. Both neighbors accuse one another of starting the clashes. And the Venezuelan president dismisses the U.S. military threats against his country as acts of imperialist aggression and violation of international law.
Live from Tehran, I am Bahman Nouri, and this is news.
In yet another violation of the ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes have carried out fresh airstrikes across the Palestinian territory. At least 20 strikes were reported, hitting northern and southern areas, eastern Gaza City and the Al-Maghazi refugee camp in central Gaza. A civil defense worker died after succumbing to injuries from a strike near Al-Ibat Mosque in Beit Lahia. Since the ceasefire took effect in October, more than 360 Palestinians, most of them women and children, have been killed in Israeli attacks. The overall toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war, which began